Maybe you've seen someone or a plant that's kind of fragile and weak, and you have to support it as it begins to grow. Some flowers are extra tall and extra heavy, and so they need a support system to help them as they grow tall and strong, right? So this is a picture. There's actually a support system in there. You see the cross-section of little willow twigs. They look so nice and nature-y, but it's just designed to help support the plant as it grows taller and stronger, right? Tomato vines are like this. If there's no trellis for the tomato vine, what happens to it? It grows, but it's blah. And it goes sideways, and the fruit starts to rot, and it's not healthy at all, not good for the plant. It needs to have that structure, that support, to help it as it grows, right? We could say children are like this as well. Children are loud and demanding and vulnerable and so selfish. And they're ungrateful and angry and give me what I want now. But they would die if the parents aren't there, right? And they need mom to take care of them, or else they're not going to last too long. And of course, they're cute and cuddly. I've learned this phrase, they're cute when they sleep. And I think that's pretty accurate sometimes. Children need that support structure to help them grow strong. If they grow independent of their parents' upbringing, instruction, they need more than food and water and shelter, right? They need love and nurture and truth. They need to grow up with a clear understanding of the God who has created them and loves them. They need a sense of authority, good authority, and love that ultimately reflects God himself. Children need that support structure, and we may or may not have had that when we think about our own mothers and our own backgrounds. We'll touch on that a little bit later on. But what we'll do here with the story of Ruth and Naomi is we'll meet somebody who is very much like this plant, a lady whose faith was very weak. And by herself, she would not have been strong or borne any fruit at all. She needed support, and she needed structure around her. And when she found that structure and support around her, her faith in God grew. And as God worked through the people around her, she ended up being a tremendous hero of faith, and one who was an example to us all. And so we'll be considering this account of Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. In one sense, we could say that if Ruth was here, she'd probably say, Happy Mother-in-Law Day. She was closer to her mother-in-law than her mother necessarily. But it's very meaningful. And I'd encourage you, if you're not in Ruth already, to turn there in your own scriptures. We have some verses on the screen, but we'll be reading a few others also. And what we'll be doing, we'll kind of survey the whole story of Ruth to start out with. Then we'll zoom in on some of the people in this story. And then we'll zoom out and get a big picture of some of the lessons that God expects us to learn and how to connect them with where we are right now. What is helpful is you look at the book of Ruth, it follows another book. What comes in front of Ruth? Judges. And maybe you think, Judges, not my favorite book of the Bible. The Judges is a book that really describes a time in Israel's history. They had the land, but they were not close to God or faithful to him in driving out the other inhabitants who were being punished by God. And also they joined with them in worshiping other idols. And so you have accounts of God punishing them. And because of the punishment, they realize, oh no, we need to go back to God. We're so sorry. They come back to God and he sends a deliverer, a judge, a Gideon, a Samson, right? A Barak, a Deborah. And then after that judge dies, it starts all over again. The cycle starts over. There's no stability in the country. No stability for the people. Not as healthy, not as strong as they needed to be. Especially at the end of the book of Judges, because we see two accounts which are, I'll just say they're very scandalous, very horrific when you take the time to read through them. But they both involve people from Bethlehem. The first account describes a man who lives in Bethlehem. And there'll be a couple warning flags here. His daughter became the concubine for a Levite. Wait a minute. The second wife for a Levite? That's not supposed to happen. Well, she runs away from her husband, comes back home to dad in Bethlehem. And the husband comes to track her down again and to convince her to move back in with him. And the dad meets the guy. Ah, nice guy. You know what? Yeah, why don't you go back to him? He's not such a bad guy. Go ahead. But don't leave right away. Let's have a party. One day passes. Let's have another party. Another one. Oh, why do you have to leave? And there's this impression of someone who's very indulgent, very irresponsible. And because of that, he does not set them the stage for success. We'll put it that way. And what happens next is very horrific, very tragic and graphic. But this man from Bethlehem is not a very good host. The second story is a story about someone else from Bethlehem, a Levite who is living in Bethlehem. And he decides to travel to a different part of the country, and he meets another man who has a homemade idol that he made using silver that he stole from his mom. It's so odd. And then the guy says, hey, you're a Levite. Be my priest for my idol. I'll pay you. Okay, sure. And he switches to being a priest for a false god. And then a whole tribe, like a giant group of people, travels past the house. They know there's a special idol there, and there's a Levite. Hey, why don't you come with us? We'll steal the idol. We'll hire you. You'll get a promotion. You're the priest to a whole tribe now, not just a family. Okay, sure. And so this man from Bethlehem clearly does not show any loyalty to God or his word. What's most shocking at the end of that account, it's very likely that this man is a close descendant of Moses, one of Moses' own grandkids or great-grandkids. And so you finish the story of Judges, you're like, what is happening in this country? Instability, leaders are corrupt and inconsistent, the people are clearly morally bankrupt, and so confused about any kind of worship to the true God. But then we come to Ruth, and we meet someone else from Bethlehem who's very noble and very a positive example for us. We'll read of a lady from Moab who has strong faith in God. And this is the bridge, because the last word of the book of Ruth is the word, well, maybe you can cheat. The last word of the book of Ruth is the word David. Ruth is the bridge from Judges to David through Samuel. And so Ruth is a very meaningful story. It's a beautiful story. Some people read this and say it can't be true. Life doesn't work out like that. It can't be so nice and clean cut. Well, God is very good at writing true stories. And so what we read here is exactly what has happened. I'll mention one thing here as we begin. If you want to learn more and you haven't found, there's a YouTube channel called The Bible Project. They do a fantastic job of surveying a book of the Bible. This was a 7-minute video that portrays, gives the whole big picture and the big themes of the book of Ruth. Fantastic job. Now, it took me more than 7 minutes to think through the sermon for this morning, this afternoon, but it's a really helpful resource. So if you want to jot it down, The Bible Project, great channel to look at and reference in your own Bible reading goals. But what we'll look at is the survey of this story of Ruth. And as we do, we'll consider the way down, and then we'll come to the way up. As we consider the way down, we're looking at the nation as a whole. We've already touched on the book of Judges and the setting there. We see two clear ideas from the book of Judges. God is surprisingly faithful to his people, and his people are surprisingly unfaithful to God. Constantly, constantly, people fail. Every man did what was right in his own eyes, we're told, especially in those last accounts, those appendices at the end of the book of Judges. And so as a nation, things are not stable for them. They're going downhill quickly. But not only as a nation, but as one family. And I'll begin reading in Ruth chapter 1 about this family of Naomi. It came about in the days when the judges governed, there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. So Naomi, she's the wife, her husband takes the family and their two young sons. They leave their home country of Bethlehem and travel across the Jordan River to Moab, which is interesting because Moab is one of the invading countries in the book of Judges, at the beginning of the book of Judges. But they need to go there to find food. And in that time frame, it was very much a farm-based agricultural society. No food for them in the farm. We got to leave. So they leave and they sojourn there a little bit. Well, a little bit turns into a lot of it. Verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech. His wife's name is Naomi. The names of their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. These, in the Hebrew, it means like weak and feeble and frail. So maybe they're as young babies, they were not very strong, or maybe just the family situation was not good. Ephrathites of Bethlehem and Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her two sons. Foreign country, two young sons. Maybe they're not so young because shortly after that they get married. But they're staying there. These sons took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other was Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. So 10 years for this lady now. She has her sons and her daughters-in-law. Her husband died, but at least they have some sense of stability. But then, verse 5, then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. The woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. No husband, no children, no home, no original family. Her only relatives are foreigners. She's losing everything, and it's likely at this point she's lost hope. What about Ruth as an individual? Well, in her home country, she married a foreigner. Not a terribly big deal. But I think what is a challenge is she spent 10 years and no children. And in that society, it's expected you have children. That's a sign of God's blessing on you. So now, her husband has not given her children. 10 years later, he dies. And her mother-in-law says that she's going back home to Bethlehem. What do? You're Ruth. It is interesting because Ruth decides to go back with Naomi, that she must have seen Naomi's faith to a degree. She was convinced that the God of Naomi, the God of Israel, is the true God. She's willing to switch gods and go back to a foreign land where she would be a foreigner and a widow. And Israel may not have been known as the most, you know, opening, welcoming society in the world. It's a difficult situation for Ruth as well. That's the way down, we'll say. But what's most powerful about the account of the book of Ruth is how God is working behind the scenes. And we'll suggest a few things. There are some parallels here in chapters 2 and chapter 3. We'll come back to the idea of Ruth, of Naomi's name and what it means when we focus on her as a person. But we'll just move on in the story. In chapter 2, we see that Ruth and Naomi plan at the beginning of the chapter. We need food. Let me go work. Sure. Go to the field. This is a very normal custom. If a lady or someone who was very destitute needed food, they didn't have a job, they didn't have land to farm or harvest their own food, they would go to a separate field, and after that field was kind of harvested at first, they could come behind and pick up the leftovers. And there was usually enough for them to be able to be satisfied. And this is what God expected. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 19. This is what Moses institutes in the beginning. When you reap your harvest in your field, if you've forgotten a sheaf or you like missed a spot in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien or the sojourner, for the orphan, for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. And so there were times that a field would have a few leftover harvested options, grains, fruit, depending on what the season or the field is, and other people could come behind and collect the leftovers, and they could live off of that. So this is what Ruth is going to do. Well, she just happens to come across the field of a guy named Boaz. She works hard all morning, and now in the middle of the chapter, there's a conversation with Boaz. And we see there, because of that, he shows favor to her. Wow, Ruth, I've heard of you. I'm amazed at your work ethic, your commitment to your mother-in-law. Have some food. He serves her lunch. The landowner serves this lady lunch. Along with all the other workers there, he makes sure, do not overlook her, do not neglect her, make sure she gets her fair share. Here, you just have my plate. And then later on, he gives her extra food to take home to her mom to make sure she's taken care of. She comes back and tells Naomi, well, you brought a lot of food back with you. Where did you go? Oh, some guy named Boaz. Boaz! And Naomi perks up because she realizes he's related to them, perhaps a cousin, but in some way closely related, maybe he can help take care of them to make sure that they're cared for. Well, chapter 3 is very similar in the structure because, beginning of the chapter, Ruth and Naomi start talking and they have a plan. Now, this time, instead of trying to make sure they have enough food, let's have a family. They could appeal for the closest family member to take them in, to take care of their land by inheritance, and that would include marrying Ruth. And so Ruth's child would actually follow in the line of her deceased husband. Well, who could they appeal to for this? Boaz he's a close relative. He's eligible. All of a sudden, maybe there's something we can go to see him. Okay, so Ruth gets ready. She goes that night, approaches Boaz as he's celebrating his harvest season. And they have a conversation where she asks him, please take us in. Marry me, if you will. But more than just marry me, take care of us. Shelter us. Protect us. I'll read the request that she makes of him. Chapter 3, verse 9, she said, I am Ruth, your maid. Spread your covering over your maid. You are a close relative. Can I be sheltered under you? Can you take care of us? And she appeals to him, and again, she finds favor in his eyes. Absolutely, I will. Here, have some more food. And he gives her more food to take home to her mom. And what's powerful at that point is because she comes home, her mom's like, her mother-in-law, wow, look at all this food. What happened? He said yes! And they're excited. He's going to take care of us. We're safe. We're secure. We're protected. Wonderful accounts of God working through Boaz in that. What's also amazing, at the end of chapter 4, we see a lot of parallel with going back to chapter 1. In chapter 1, people died. It was hopeless. Chapter 4, a baby's born. There's hope. It's meaningful that Boaz couldn't just automatically redeem Ruth. Someone else is a closer relative than Boaz was. So Ruth and Naomi still had to trust that things would work out at the end of chapter 3. Boaz in chapter 4 goes to this individual, calls him up, says, Naomi, she's lost her husband, all her sons, so she needs to be taken care of. Her land needs to be claimed in her name. Would you do it? Sure, more land, no problem. And you'll marry her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Oh, well, I already have a family and I'd have to spread it. I just don't think I can. Boaz says, yes, then I'll be glad to. And he takes the responsibility for Ruth and Naomi. We already read at the beginning of our sermon today, God's blessing on them and the joy for Naomi. So that's kind of a very quick survey of the story. We're reminding ourselves of these details. But it's worth zooming in on some of these individuals. I'm sorry, before we look at the individuals, we'll have a few big themes that really stand out to us. One theme is this, or one question is this. Will God restore Naomi? She has lost much. A woman of faith, but also feels like she's been abandoned. She wasn't planning any of this, but just people were dying around her. In fact, it's almost like she has the opposite of the Midas touch. You know, Midas, everything he touched turned into gold. Naomi, everything she touches dies. Don't come with me. I'm bad luck. Will God actually restore this lady as she goes back home to Bethlehem? What will she find? What about Ruth? Will Ruth find rest? She's willing to devote herself to Naomi and Naomi's God. Will the Lord honor her for her devotion, for her sacrifice? It's a key question. And what's really amazing as we explore this story, I'll mention two themes. One theme is loyalty. Ruth shows loyalty to her mother-in-law. In chapter 1, verse 8, Naomi wishes, she gives a blessing to Ruth and to the other sister-in-law, Orpah. May the Lord deal kindly or with loyalty to you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May God bless you. Now, she doesn't know, but she'll be part of the answer to that prayer. Because then verse 9, she says, may the Lord grant that you find rest in the house of your husband. Oh, the Lord will surely answer that prayer through Naomi even. But later in chapter 2, verse 20, Ruth is praised because she has shown loyalty. Naomi praises God because he has not withdrawn his kindness, his loyalty. And then chapter 3, verse 10, again, Ruth is one who's shown loyalty. You see, loyalty of Ruth to Naomi. Boaz is loyal to his word. He said he would redeem them and he's going to keep his word. Naomi knows the sun's not going to go down until this guy finishes the job. He's on a mission. He's going to finish. And those are amazing, powerful examples of loyalty, but they also point us to the bigger idea of loyalty, right? This is the setting of Judges. Who is loyal to whom? Well, God's people are not loyal to him. They get distracted. I'm loyal to God for a little bit, but there's something else more exciting. They get pulled away from loving God and they love idols instead. They try alliances with other nations thinking that they have it better. And yet God is stable and faithful and loyal to them. God is loyal to his people. He sends judges and messengers. Or in the account of Ruth, he works behind the scenes. Another key idea is the idea of redemption. There's this land that needs to be claimed for Naomi's family. Ruth needs to be claimed as the widow. Who will take care of her? Who will be the father of her children? That's her goal, right? And so there's this appeal, who will take care of us? And the idea of a redeemer, redemption, comes up over 30 times in this small story. And so this is the big ideas to the story of Ruth. Let's zoom in on the one person now. We'll focus on each of these people. What do we see about Naomi specifically? We'll call Naomi a restored mourner. We'll go back at the beginning of Ruth and we'll see how Naomi looks at God. If you're in Naomi's shoes, would you have strong faith? What would you say about God? Well, it's amazing how she describes God or what she says of him. We're going to look in chapter 1. Look at her really hopeless attitude. Verse 13, she says, would you wait till, if I were to have sons again, would you wait for them? Would you wait not to get married for another 15, 20 years? No, my daughters, it's harder for me than for you. The hand of the Lord has gone against me. The hand of the Lord has gone against me. God hates me. Everything God does is against me. I knew it, trying to follow him, but nothing works. Maybe you felt that way, right? Later, when she travels to Bethlehem, people see her. Naomi! Wait, I think it... Is it not because she had a face mask, but because 10 years have passed, she has aged quite a bit. As the wrinkles, the gray hair. You're not the vibrant woman of faith that we knew. You knew God would take care of you in Moab, that's what you said. But now, is this Naomi? No, it's not me. Naomi means pleasant, lovely. Don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara, bitter. Call me angry. Call me resentful. Call me frustrated. Why is that? Because the Almighty, the powerful one, God of all power and glory, he has dealt bitterly with me. Yeah, I'm a believer in a cruel God. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Pleasant, the Lord has witnessed against me. The Almighty has afflicted me. God has cursed me. Talk about weak faith, greatly in need of support and encouragement. And so at the beginning of this story, Naomi is hopeless. God is strong, yes, but is God good? That's the dilemma for her, because she doesn't see it. Now, it's not the end of her story, and that's what's so amazing for us. We look at chapter 2. She learns about Boaz, and look how she responds to this account now. Chapter 2, verse 20, may this man Boaz be blessed of the Lord who... Now, what is the Lord doing now? He has not withheld his kindness to the living and the dead. You know what? Maybe he hasn't given up on me yet. Maybe he's not completely evil. Maybe God is actually kind at times. Maybe today was a good day. For you, Ruth, right? But she's seeing that God has not abandoned her. He has not forgotten about her. He has not overlooked her. He is not staring at her cruelly. The God of heaven is concerned for her. And he shows it through the actions of Ruth. And what's most exciting is what we already read. There at the end of the story, these ladies who at first didn't recognize Naomi, now they talk to her again. Naomi, blessed be the Lord God. Make sure I get the right spot. Bless the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. May his name become famous in Israel. May he be a restorer of life, sustainer of your old age. And he goes on and on. Wow, blessed be the Lord who has taken care of Naomi. You are now full. She is a restored mourner. She doesn't have two sons. She has one wonderful grandson. I'm sure he could do no wrong. I'm sure he was spoiled, and that's okay. But notice in the next verse, verse 15, they say, this daughter-in-law is better to her than seven sons. Truly, she's reminded of God's goodness through the people in her life. Now, Naomi is an example of a restored mourner. What about Ruth? Ruth's amazing. We'll call her a loyal daughter. She's described as a daughter often. Many people call her daughter. Boaz calls her my daughter. Naomi calls her a daughter. In this case, Ruth is an example of someone who is willing to really devote herself to God. You see there in chapter 1, her attitude when she talks to Naomi. She tells her, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. You may be familiar with this passage. It's an amazing passage of commitment, right? Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Not an easy statement to make. Your God is now my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. I'm not just going to die and be buried back home. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. Strong commitment that Ruth shows to her mother-in-law. Listen, your God is the real God. I am committing to following you. Naomi, you need help. Sister, you're not going to be okay by yourself. Let me go with you and support you because you need help. I'm willing to give up everything, my old family, my old culture, my own life, my old religion, because the God of heaven is the God of Israel. He is the true God. I'm willing to commit to him. Boaz praises her for this later on, chapter 2. He first meets Ruth. He says, I've not heard about you, all that you've done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband. It's been fully reported to me how you left your father and your mother, the land of your birth, and you came to a people that you did not previously know. And now Boaz gives a blessing to her, not knowing that he will be the one who helps to fulfill that blessing. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Ruth is a startled and uncertain and unstable little bird, and she finds under the wings of the Almighty God protection and care and comfort. Now, you can imagine the gossip in that community. Oh, there's Naomi. Hey, who's with her? Doesn't look Israelite to me. I don't know what it is. Must be her servant. I don't get it. I don't know. Her daughter-in-law. Oh, must have been pretty desperate to leave home and come back here. Oh, she chose to leave. And all of a sudden, the town talk becomes positive. You mean she chose to? Like she gave up everything to come here? And she's devoted to her mother-in-law, and she's doing it. She's working in the fields to take care of her. Wow! And Boaz, a nobleman, a man of character and integrity, recognizes that and praises Ruth for this. Later on in chapter 3, this is really interesting when she approaches him and appeals to him, "Please take care of us. Please take care of me." He tells her this: "You've shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich." Apparently, Boaz was not very young. Older man. She apparently was not very old, very maybe younger, attractive. She could have given her attention to somebody else. But Boaz says, you know what? I recognize you're choosing to ask for my help because you want to take care of your family, and this is appropriate, and this is good. May the Lord bless you for this. You didn't just run off after whoever else you saw. You were wise and thoughtful. And in one sense, she shows loyalty all along the way, and God honors her for this. Ruth's name shows up in the genealogy of Jesus Christ himself, the Messiah. And it's extra special for Ruth, because if you were to go to Matthew chapter 1, you see her name. She's a few generations ahead of David, but before her, by one generation, her husband Boaz, he has a mother, and her name is given in Matthew chapter 1. You know his mother's name? Rahab, woman from Jericho, prostitute, former prostitute, a foreigner, who joins God's covenant people, is blessed by being part of the line of the Messiah. Her son Boaz marries another foreigner. So Ruth used to have a mother-in-law, Naomi. Now she has a new mother-in-law, Rahab, another foreigner. That must have been a very sweet conversation if Rahab was still living at that point. It's amazing to see God's goodness to Ruth, a lady who would abandon everything because she saw the God of heaven is the true God, and she devotes herself to him. One more person we'll look at is Boaz. We'll consider Boaz. We'll just call him a gracious redeemer. Again, Boaz is not perfect. No one in the story is perfect, but he is shown in this story as a positive example. It's really powerful. Ruth, in chapter 3, he calls her a woman of excellence, chapter 3, verse 11. It's a woman of virtue. The Hebrew is chayil. You're a woman of virtue. Sound familiar? Proverbs chapter 31. This virtuous woman is exactly what Ruth is. Hardworking, concerned for her family. Respectable, full of integrity in the community. High, high reputation. Well, the beginning of Ruth, Boaz is also described, chapter 2, verse 1, as a man of chayil, a man of integrity, a man of character. We'll zoom out, just call it a man of character. First time we meet Boaz, he greets his workers, "May God bless you. God bless you, sir." And he talks, and every interaction with Boaz is a positive one. Every time he meets Ruth, he gives her something, He shows concern for her. He wants to make sure she is taken care of and protected. Amazing attitude that this man has. And then she appeals to him to redeem her, and he does not hesitate at all. He praises Ruth, admires her for her example of loyalty and devotion. He provides for her. And so at the end, it was no doubt exciting when this other relative decides not to claim Naomi and Ruth and help with their household. Boaz has the distinct privilege of doing this. I'll read what he says in chapter 4, verse 9. You are witnesses today. I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. And they all echo, we are witnesses. May God bless you. Very formal declaration. I have claimed this family. I will marry this woman and I will take care of her. Everybody know. Wonderful example of this redeemer, this one who will claim someone and care for her. We know that later on, this leads to this new descendant named David. He will be the king that Israel was looking for. Not a perfect king by any means, but the one who could bring a little more stability and order to their land. And of course, we know that that King David is just a preview of the king that we've all been looking for. We want a perfect leader, whether a husband or a father, or any kind of position of responsibility. We wish we had someone who would take care of us, who would meet our needs, who would protect us, who would praise us when we do the right thing. Oh, man, if only there was someone like that. We're looking for Jesus Christ, the one who says, I see you, I know you, I will care for you. Well done. I have claimed you already as my child. And there's a security and a stability that comes from considering this preview of this perfect leader that Boaz gives us. Well, let's finish up with a few lessons then that we'll glean from this story. The story of Ruth really matches our time today. You'll notice in that story, not one time does God do anything. At least we're not told that he does. God doesn't give them a special revelation, a special message. They say, may God bless you. And then they're doing things. But God is so active behind the scenes. Ruth just happened to come back with Naomi at the time of barley harvest. She just happened to go out to the field of Boaz, who just happened to be a relative of Naomi. Boaz just happened to notice Ruth when he happened to come to that part of the field at that time of day. My friends, this is not coincidence. We see the hand of God in this. Boaz just happened to not have a wife and his own family to take care of. They all happen to be people of integrity and character. Naomi happened to have a daughter-in-law who didn't die, who reassured her and stabilized her faith. And that matches today because in one sense, we're saying, where is God in this? Why don't I get a fresh message from you? I have my Bible, but. And we're looking for more obvious things that God does. My friends, God is very active behind the scenes. Very active. And he's already told us he's given us his son. There's nothing much more that he needs to give besides that. Beyond that or above that, we have Jesus Christ and the revelation of Jesus Christ given to us in Scripture. And so perhaps the setting of Ruth definitely works in ours. I'm not going to say that if you trust in God like Naomi did, then your grandson will be, you know, the grandfather of the next king. We're not going to make that connection. I'm not going to say, you know, you're Ruth and you try to obey God, you don't get married within a year. We're not going to make promises like that. We do want to think through principles, though, that match where we are. The Lord says this, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. It is a guaranteed promise. Broken hearts will be healed. God, who allows temporary pain, brings permanent healing. A scar is not a wound. I'm gonna stop with these little phrases, but here's the idea. There is a God who will heal and restore. He may wait until after we die. How dare he? A couple extra years? I mean, I have to go through all the hard things in this life. My friends, this is a very short life and a very broken world full of very sinful people like us. We can't be surprised when we feel more suffering. But when, after this life ends, and we begin the reality in the presence of God, everything is restored. There will be plenty of comfort to spare for us. Jesus said this, Matthew 19:29, everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or fathers or mother or children or farms for my name's sake will receive many times as much and will inherit eternal life. God abundantly rewards those who trust in him. He will abundantly reward us. The question is, will we keep trusting in him? So let me connect that to the three different people in the story. Perhaps you feel like you are Naomi. It's been a rough year. It's been a rough day. You're worn out. You're weak. You're told to just trust in God, and that sounds very fake and very shallow and very plastic. Oh, my friend, please continue to cling to the Lord. He does not abandon his own. The Almighty does not afflict us and leave us. What's really powerful in this account, Naomi's story matches very much that of Job. Think of Job's story. Lost his own family, all of his possessions. His friends turned into his backbiters, the people who questioned him and accused him. God was gracious to Job. Again, God may not be gracious and remove all the pain and frustration that we want right now, because he's going to use it to produce even more good in the future. And it takes faith to accept that, but it is a true statement. So maybe with Naomi, please, let's cling to the Lord. Maybe you're like Ruth. You know, your faith is pretty strong right now. You devoted yourself to God. This is going to be my God, and I'm going to stand here and die, and it doesn't matter if you can bury me. It doesn't matter. I am going to be loyal to this God. Well, then may God bless you and encourage you even further. May you find rest and shelter like they wished on Ruth. May God strengthen you and give you abundant fruit. May you be amazed how he is growing your faith. Maybe you're like Boaz. God is blessed, and you're able to give to others. Please reflect the loyalty of our God. There are many, and I'll just kind of apply it here in closing to our own church family. Our church has been in different services. We've had just a sense of inconsistency and not having stability with Pastor Tim out for a few weeks. Thankfully, we've been able to stay open. We had one week where we did just the live stream. But there are people who are not strong spiritually. If you're here and you're a Boaz, may God use us. Hey, how you doing? A quick text, a quick phone call. Hey, I miss seeing you. What's going on? How can I pray with you? I'm concerned for you, brother, sister. What's going on? And there's a reaching out to connect with other people to see what their needs are. God could fill our churches with a Boaz's, and if he fills us with Boaz's, then soon we'll be full of Ruth's and Naomi's too. And so I want to pray that God uses us to reach out to other people, to reflect God's love. And sometimes people say, I wish God would do something for me. And then God's like, all right, I'm going to answer the prayer. I'm going to send you. And you find you're praying for somebody. Dear God, please bless them and encourage them. Amen. I think God wants me to send them a text right now. Guess what? You could be the part of the answer to that prayer that you just prayed for them. God uses people to bless and to show his love to others as well. With that in mind, let's bow in prayer. We'll take a few moments of individual prayer. You can cling to the Lord. Confess doubt, frustration. Be open with him. Affirm again, I believe you. I need you. I trust you. And perhaps offer yourself to the Lord again. However you want to use me, I'm open. I'm willing. Please show me where I can be used. Help me meet someone who needs help. I'll close this in prayer in just a moment, but let's take a few moments of quiet.